everyone. I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Thank you all for joining us this week. Today's case reminds me a bit of our 19th episode, the disappearance of Marshall Iwasa. And that case and today's case both involve a man disappearing and then his vehicle turning up many miles away. There's a series of events that played out for the vehicle to end up where it did, but because we don't know what those events were, it makes it very mysterious. All right, let's dive in. Lopez Richardson was 32 years old at the time of his disappearance in 2021. Lopez grew up in the small town of Clarksdale, Mississippi, and Clarksdale is often referred to as a birthplace of the blues. It has a rich musical heritage, with several legendary blues musicians having lived or performed there. Music was important to Lopez from a young age, and he was well-versed in the history of Clarksdale. Lopez has been described as artistically gifted. When I looked at his work, some of his art, it appeared that he could create art in many forms using different mediums, but it seemed that painting was really his true passion. After high school, Lopez enrolled in Cahoma Community College, located in Clarksdale, and it was here where he met his future wife. Now, in some reports, her name has been withheld by her choice. In some more recent coverage, she has used her name, but just to err on the side of caution, we will call her T, which is the first letter of her first name. T told Paramount Plus's Never Seen Again that when she met Lopez, she had a young son, and Lopez was great with him right away. Lopez really treated him as if it were his own child, and they developed a special bond. T and Lopez eventually married, and they had a daughter together in 2011, whom Lopez adored. And overall, I got the impression that Lopez put being a father first in life, and he really doted on his daughter and his stepson, and they adored him as well. In July 2014, Lopez and T decided to make a move to Houston, Texas. Although they loved Mississippi, they were ready for a change and were possibly looking for different opportunities beyond what Clarksdale could provide. Once they arrived in Houston, Lopez got a job working as a mechanic, and a friend of his was in a motorcycle club. So Lopez became very interested in motorcycles. He joined this motorcycle club, and he began working on motorcycles in addition to cars, I think just kind of in his spare time.
Did they have any family in Houston?
My understanding is that their family was rooted in Mississippi, both of their families. So I don't believe they had any family in Houston, but they definitely had a couple of friends there. It sounded like when they moved there, and then they both made more friends while they were there. In July 2020, Lopez got into a motorcycle accident and sustained pretty severe injuries to his leg and foot. And during surgery, metal pins were inserted into some of the bones in his foot, and they were still present at the time of his disappearance. This injury made it more difficult for Lopez to get around or to walk great distances. After moving to Houston, the relationship between Lopez and T began to fall apart. So they made the difficult decision to separate, although they did not get divorced. At that point, Lopez decided to move to Rosenberg, Texas, because that would bring him closer to where his work was. And Rosenberg sits about 58 miles or 93 kilometers away from Spring, Texas, in the greater Houston area. And that is where T lived. So they're about almost 60 miles apart from each other. Even though Lopez and T were separated, they still maintained a friendship. There didn't appear to be hostility between them at all. And I can imagine this benefited their daughter and T's son for them to see that despite their separation, they could still have a positive relationship. Fast forward a bit to 2021, and Lopez began to merge his artistic talent with his love for tattoos. We already talked about how he was an artist, but he also loved tattoos. He had quite a few on his body, and he decided to become a tattoo artist with the aspiration of opening his own shop, which he ultimately did very shortly before his disappearance. His business was called Dear Life Tattoos in Rosenberg, and by all accounts, the shop was doing well. Lopez and T had an arrangement where their daughter would split time between them. So on July 5th, 2021, their daughter was with Lopez until he called T and asked if he could drop their daughter off with her. Lopez did not state why, but he also didn't give off any red flags at that time or act strangely. So to date, we don't really know exactly why he cut his time short with her, but we have an idea. We will have an idea. After Lopez dropped their daughter off around 11 p.m., T talked with him a few times on the phone until July 7th, so a few days after their exchange. During some of these phone calls, Lopez made alarming statements. He told T that he got involved with some of the wrong people and that he disrespected the wrong person.
So did he upset someone within the motorcycle gang?
Yes. My understanding is that this was at least one person within the motorcycle club. They're referred to as a club, not a gang. So it was someone within there. I think T has a good idea of who this person was or who the people were. She has not ever named them publicly. I don't blame her for not naming them publicly. But yeah, you can imagine in a conversation where your ex tells you this, the father of your child, you're going to be asking those questions. Well, who are you talking about? What did they say? So I think more details were relayed than we know.
So she didn't release the information of this person who she thinks it was after he disappeared?
No, because she said she thinks she knows who it was, okay, but she isn't certain. So she's not going to put someone's name out there and say that when she's not 100% certain, or even if she was, that's something that she has relayed to the police, but she doesn't necessarily need to put their name out there.
Yeah, I mean, she's probably a little bit concerned about her safety and her daughter's safety too.
Yeah, I definitely think she's concerned. Yeah, and I think that's why she wasn't using her name in the beginning. She's using it a little bit more now when she speaks, but I think she was concerned. During those phone calls, Lopez also indicated that he wouldn't get a chance to apologize, although he spoke with his daughter during his last phone call, and he told her that he was very sorry. Then he said, "Goodbye, I love you." When I heard this, I was wondering what he was apologizing for. What happened that was so concerning that he seemed to be scared? T remarked that saying goodbye was unusual for Lopez. He typically just said, "See you later," at the end of a conversation. So this felt like it had some finality to it. It felt a little more permanent to her. About 20 minutes after that final phone call, one of Lopez's fellow motorcycle members called T and asked if she'd heard from Lopez because they were a little worried about him. They were trying to get in touch with him. She found this timing to be odd, but could it be that he was in communication with some of the members? He was making statements similar to those he made to T. That could draw concern. So on July 7th, that was the last known time that Lopez was heard from. And the last time he was known to be seen was actually July 5th, when he dropped his daughter off around 11 p.m. in Spring, Texas with T. After that, T's calls and texts began to go unanswered, which raised concerns for T. We have to keep in mind the alarming statements Lopez made, but also that they frequently communicated. They have a child together, but they were still friends too. So it was very much normal for them to talk either on the phone or through text on a regular basis. T's concern continued to grow, so she began searching around Rosenberg with a few others in an attempt to locate him. But when she was unsuccessful, she decided to report him as a missing person to the Rosenberg police on July 8th. Before an investigation could even really begin, Lopez's truck, a Dodge Ram, was discovered abandoned in the woods around 12:45 p.m. on July 9th. So that was the day after T reported him missing. Strangely, his truck was in the town of Howe, Texas, which is located north of Dallas near the Texas-Oklahoma border, almost 330 miles away from Rosenberg, or about a five-hour drive away. Howe is a small town with a population of approximately 3,700. And according to T, she didn't know anyone there. And as far as she knew, neither did Lopez. There was no reasonable explanation for why his vehicle would have been in Howe. A sergeant with the Howe Police Department discovered the truck partially in a ravine, with the rear of the truck kind of angling down into the ravine to the west of railroad tracks. It was very close to these railroad tracks. According to the incident report, the sergeant who found the vehicle observed several tire marks in the gravel, which indicated the vehicle was possibly heading south, either on the railroad tracks or kind of adjacent to the tracks. And it's quite a strange scene. I just showed Sean some photos, and we'll share photos of the truck to our Instagram page, Key to the Case Podcast. But essentially, his truck was crashed and tipping into the ravine and surrounded by weeds and trees. Well, I say crash, but in the report of the incident, it's considered abandoned. Also, the truck's gear shift was in the reverse position, which makes me think that the person driving the vehicle likely wanted it to end up where it did.
Yeah, I noticed two things. It looked like whoever was driving the truck was trying to make it look hidden in the brush. I mean, it was pretty deep into the woods. I mean, the front end was still sticking out, but maybe they could have hit an interference or something that prevented it from going deeper. But it definitely looks like it was attempted to be hidden. And the second thing I noticed was it was definitely backed in, not pulled forward for whatever reason. So I suppose that's the reason why it was locked in reverse. Maybe they hit a interference while they were backing into the brush, and yeah, they just hit a stopping point.
And they couldn't reverse anymore. Right. They couldn't back up anymore. Right. Yeah, I agree with those observations. It's very much, it's partially concealed, the vehicle, I guess is what I would say. And I'm surprised a little bit that it was found as soon as it was, but I agree. It kind of looks like maybe that was the goal here, to conceal it just in the way it appears. It's not completely hidden by any means. But then if you couple that with the vehicle being in reverse, then yeah, it seems like someone intentionally crashed this vehicle into this ravine. And it's certainly suspicious. And then you ask yourself, why would Lopez do that if he's the driver? A natural assumption might be that the person who was driving this truck or anyone inside the truck could have suffered injuries. So when T received the news, she expressed this concern to the police that Lopez may have gotten into an accident, right? She doesn't know the full circumstances here. He became disoriented, left his vehicle, and he was somewhere needing help. But the police indicated that they had already searched the area and found no sign of Lopez.
Do you know if the airbags were deployed?
No, the airbags were not deployed.
Yeah, the only reason I ask is it would make me kind of think about or question the speed in which the truck was backed into that spot. Because I think if it was driven at a higher speed and whoever was driving it hit that interference, if they were driving at a pretty high speed, then I would think the airbags would be deployed. But if they were somewhat carefully backing it up at a lower speed and they bumped into that tree or, you know, whatever it was, then the airbags would not be deployed. So yeah, I'm just kind of thinking if they were driving at a lower speed, maybe they were intentionally putting the truck there anyway, I would think, but
it seems that way. Yeah. Basically, the airbags not being deployed could tell us something about the circumstances in which the truck ended in that spot.
Whether they found a good spot and put it in reverse and really hit the gas and tried to just get it in there fast, or whether they were deliberate about it and slowly backed it in until they hit a stopping point.
Yeah. And I should also add that this area has kind of been described as, you'd kind of have to know how to get to that spot, but it is very close to the highway that Lopez or whoever is driving his truck likely would have been driving on if they were driving on the highway. So you could get off the highway, end up in Howe, and find this spot. Like, it's not too far away, but at the same time, maybe the person who was driving or put the vehicle here was familiar with Howe and was familiar with this spot or knew someone who was. So it seemed that T had some doubts about the search conducted by police, so she contacted Tim Miller with Texas Equisearch for assistance. I know some of you may be familiar with Texas Equisearch, but in case you are not, it is a phenomenal search and rescue nonprofit organization headquartered near Houston. And Tim Miller founded Equisearch, and his story is unique in that his daughter was murdered in 1984, and there has yet to be an arrest. There's a lot to that story, but it's what inspired him to start Texas Equisearch. Hundreds of people have been rescued. Many have been rescued alive as a result of his team's search efforts. They're skilled in searching in vast and challenging terrain. And Tim Miller told Never Seen Again that they have more resources than most individual law enforcement agencies. So Tim and his team stepped in and they conducted a thorough search in the area where Lopez's truck was. And this included the use of search dogs. By the end of it, they came up with the same conclusion as local law enforcement, that Lopez was not in the area. So the possibility that maybe he got into this accident and suffered an injury, and then he got out of his vehicle and maybe succumbed to the elements, that seems unlikely based on the search efforts.
And it would have been really difficult for him to walk a long distance with those pins in his foot.
Exactly. That was a point T and his friends made as well, that he couldn't have gotten very far. He could still walk and get around, but it would have been really uncomfortable for him to walk so far that he isn't found through the searches for him. After the truck was located, law enforcement did a cursory search of his truck. This was truly cursory. It sounded like they were looking for either signs of a struggle or any physical evidence such as blood.
Were they also looking for fingerprints?
No.
Not on the steering wheel?
No.
Or the handle?
Okay. No. Wow. For some reason. Well, initially, the way the truck was positioned, I mean, you saw it, they said it would have been unsafe for someone to do a complete search in that position.
But they could have pulled it out and done it.
Well, that was the other problem. So the truck was on railroad property, so they needed consent to remove it. So it was just sitting there. In August, T expressed concerns about the truck being left in that location. So she's thinking, okay, this was found on July 9th, and now it's just been sitting there for weeks, and she feared that someone could tamper with the vehicle. The police assured her that this was not the case, but they went back out to the site, and it was at that time that they discovered a pair of Lopez's shoes, and they were kind of near his truck in a muddy area. And I just showed Sean a picture of the shoes. They're in this weird position where it's a little hard to imagine how they ended up like that. And again, we'll have a picture of this on our Instagram. It's not the best picture, but basically the left shoe is facing one direction and the right shoe is facing the opposite direction, kind of diagonal from it. So the toes of the shoes are facing each other. And the laces on both shoes appeared to still be tied. So the position is strange. It almost appears that they were placed there by someone, or they just came off in a really weird way. It doesn't appear that Lopez got stuck in the mud and then stepped out of his shoes or slipped out of his shoes. It's very possible that the police missed the shoes when they first came upon the vehicle, and there were no clear shoe prints or footprints around the shoes. But then again, the shoes were found several weeks after his truck was found. So I suppose it's possible that if it rained at any point, that kind of evidence could have been washed away.
Yeah, the shoes being there doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. We just discussed the pins in his foot. It's not going to be comfortable walking in shoes to start with, but removing the shoes and walking barefoot has got to be way more uncomfortable. So I do agree. It kind of looks like they may have been planted there because it just, I don't see him crashing his truck, taking off his shoes and starting to walk somewhere. That all just seems bizarre to me.
I agree. And that would stand out, I would think, if someone was in the area, they would remember probably a barefoot, large man walking around, wandering around. I know this is not a super populated area, but you'd think maybe someone would see him.
Yeah. And if someone did plant the shoes there, what would be the reason?
Yeah. Would it be to make it look like Lopez got out of the vehicle and took his shoes off? I mean, I don't really see the point.
Yeah.
What are you even gaining by planting shoes there? Like, neither situation makes sense to me.
I'm just trying to think why he would, if he was driving the car, why he would take off his shoes.
Oh, if it were him, I think the only reason would be if he got stuck in the mud. But it doesn't even, the way the shoes are positioned, it doesn't even look like how it would look if someone did get stuck in the mud.
That must be some pretty strong mud if you had to remove his shoe. Like,
I know.
And they were facing opposite directions.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah.
This whole scene doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
So the police finally received consent to fully remove the truck from the scene and search it approximately 35 days after the discovery of Lopez's truck. Once the sheriff's office removed the truck, they completed a full inventory of it. Inside the truck, they found a digital camera, a GoPro camera, Lopez's wallet, including his credit cards and identification. They allowed T to search the car on August 24th, 13 days after they searched it. Inside, T found Lopez's cell phone and a laptop under a seat. Evidently, they missed these items in their search, and from what I could find, they released the items they did find, such as the digital camera and the GoPro, to T. I presume these items all belong to Lopez, as I couldn't find any indication that these were unfamiliar items. When T took a closer look at these items from Lopez's truck, she noticed right away that data from his phone, primarily texts and phone calls, had been erased. The last activity was from June 23rd, 2021. And this was, of course, eyebrow-raising because she communicated with him through texts and phone calls after June 23rd, many times. So why was there no record of that? T couldn't think of any reason why Lopez would wipe his phone. And then upon further review of his digital camera and his GoPro camera, she found the memory cards were erased on those devices.
I suppose Lopez himself could have deleted the memory out of those devices. I mean, it also could have been someone else, whoever was driving the truck. Maybe he was driving the truck, but it could have just been him. Maybe he got mixed up with something nefarious and he needed to delete that, I don't want to say evidence, but whatever was on his phone and the camera.
The camera is a little weirder to me. Like, I can see more, like, I can understand more scenarios, I think, where someone or Lopez may have wanted to delete phone calls or text messages. Cameras are just a little harder to understand what could have been on there that Lopez, unless it's pictures of nefarious activity, I don't know, you know, what was on there that he wanted gone or someone else wanted erased.
I guess there's also the possibility that he had a brand new memory card in the camera and he hadn't used it at all. Maybe he didn't delete any previous pictures, but it was just a brand new card.
For both the GoPro and the digital camera.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. I had kind of been operating under the assumption that he was known to use these cameras and then suddenly there was nothing on them. But I suppose it's possible that these were new memory cards.
Was his new home searched at all?
My understanding is that the police did not search Lopez's home. which is, I mean, not surprising in this case, considering everything else. But going back to the phone, just because texts and calls were deleted from Lopez's phone, it's not guaranteed that this data is gone forever. According to T, Lopez had two phones, and the one he primarily used was the one found in the truck. In September, the police indicated that they could get a subpoena for the records from his cell phone, but they evidently only did this for his non-primary cell phone, which likely wouldn't have shown much activity. And I don't know what this phone was used for. There's also no information out there that indicates cell tower data or pings were reviewed.
The police in this case seem kind of, what's the right word?
Uninterested?
Useless?
They seem uninterested in this case. And I understand their perspective, I think, is, well, maybe he wanted to leave, or later I'll tell you, maybe he died by suicide. But there are enough suspicious circumstances here to warrant a complete investigation. You take the erasure of the data, along with how Lopez's truck was found, along with what he was saying before he disappeared, and that all comes together to form a suspicious picture surrounding Lopez's disappearance. And that, to me, warrants an investigation. And it's not that the police haven't investigated, but a lot of these tactics that we're talking about that would make sense standardly in an investigation have not been deployed as far as we are aware and as far as T has said. Additionally, T was able to access Lopez's bank information, and she found the last debit card transaction was on July 8th at a gas station near a truck stop in Henrietta, Oklahoma. So this was on the same day that he was reported missing. And this threw me for a loop because I'd been thinking this entire time that he, or maybe I should say his truck, never made it out of Texas. His truck was near the Texas-Oklahoma border, but still within the state of Texas. And then Henrietta is about 150 miles or 241 kilometers kind of northeast of where his truck was. So it would take a little more than 2 hours to make that drive from Howe to Henrietta. T informed a detective working Lopez's case of this charge on his debit card in Henrietta, and the detective reportedly contacted the gas station to inquire about any potential surveillance footage they may have, but the detective learned that there would be no footage to review. This is deeply disappointing because if we knew who used Lopez's debit card, that could be a major clue in this case. If someone other than Lopez used his debit card, that's just one more suspicious factor here. However, if he used his debit card, it could point us in a totally different direction. When I looked at the most direct route from Rosenberg, where Lopez lived, to Henrietta, it does take you right through Howe. Was the truck driven from Rosenberg to Henrietta and beyond Henrietta? And then it was left in Howe, or was it left in Howe on the way to somewhere else? And whoever was driving was transported in another vehicle. Just trying to make sense of the debit card use in Henrietta. You also wonder if he could have made it all the way from Rosenberg to Henrietta without stopping to get gas. There were no purchases along the way, at least with his card. And that's a 477-mile drive. Even if the truck started with a completely full tank, nearly 500 miles is pushing it for most trucks. But it's not confirmed what the debit card was used to purchase. I would assume gas, but it could have been used for anything else that could have been at that gas station near that truck stop. Tying this all back to Lopez saying he disrespected the wrong person and that he wouldn't get a chance to apologize. The language, the comments made it sound like he felt threatened. Right? Days before his disappearance, Lopez got into an altercation with some fellow members of the motorcycle club. Allegedly, someone in the club made a bad joke that Lopez took offense to, and Lopez took rather seriously, so Lopez addressed it and yelled at them. This was an escalated situation, and it seems that this is what prompted Lopez's somewhat vague statements about disrespecting the wrong person, or at least I think it was part of it. There could have been much more to this story than we know. it sounded like his response to this bad joke was not received well by the others.
Was the altercation physical or was it just strictly verbal?
There's no mention of the altercation turning physical. Sounded like it was more verbal, but there haven't been specific details given about what the joke was that Lopez got upset about. Of course, I wish we knew, but those who have that information have chosen not to share it. After Lopez disappeared, T would periodically check in on his apartment. And during one visit on July 30th, she noticed that the door to his apartment had been kicked in. Surveillance cameras from the apartment revealed that members of the motorcycle club were the ones who broke in, and they were retrieving their motorcycles because Lopez had been working on their motorcycles prior to his disappearance. So they were in his apartment. T reported this to the police, but they basically told her there wasn't much they could do. I mean, they have the people on camera who did this. And even though they were obtaining items that belonged to them, they were still breaking and entering or trespassing. So I'm not sure why the police took the report about the incident, but allegedly didn't take much action beyond that or said they couldn't.
Were any of the police officers in the motorcycle club?
I don't know. I see where you're going with that.
Any ties?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you the answer to that. Yeah. I've seen speculation about that exact concept online, but I have no information to support one way or the other to say if anyone in the investigating agency was involved with the motorcycle club. I just can't say.
They're just not doing their job. And it's frustrating.
It is frustrating. I mean, the motorcycle club members have every right to take possession of their own motorcycles. But T's point that she expressed during the Never Seen Again segment was that there's a right way to do things, and that was not the right way. What if Lopez showed up, right? This was on July 30th. He went missing, or he was last spoken to on July 7th. For all we know, he could still show back up in a few weeks, right? And now his door is kicked in to his apartment and he has to fix his door. So her point was just, you didn't have to do it that way. T seems like a reasonable person. They could have reached out to her and asked her if they could be let into the apartment. I'm sure she would have done that and let them get their motorcycles. And then there was another break-in at his apartment by members of the motorcycle club, but there were fewer details about that incident, but I know it was reported to the police. Law enforcement considers Lopez's case an open missing persons case, but they've stated that statements they have received from family and friends indicated that Lopez may have been suicidal and he wasn't acting like himself. A CNN article about the case even mentions this as though the information came from T and others. And he certainly wasn't acting like himself, but T was surprised by the suggestion of him being suicidal. It clearly didn't come from her. So who did this come from? And why is there absolutely no elaboration on this idea? Just imagine that for a moment. You have a loved one disappear who you don't think is suicidal. Then you're reading an article about the disappearance of this person so close to you, and that's the first time you hear something like that coming from police. My fear would be that if law enforcement's operating under the belief that suicide is a strong possibility regarding my family member or friend, they aren't going to investigate it the same way and with the same level of motivation as they would if they believe the person was a victim of foul play. At least that's what my fear would be. Police have stated that they don't know if Lopez was harmed or not, but even if Lopez was suicidal, which is not impossible, we can't get in his head. The question remains, where's his body and why did his truck end up where it did? There's no reason to believe that his body is anywhere near where his truck was found with the detailed searches that occurred. And I think with each theory, we should think about the most logical explanation for the truck's location, the data from the various devices being erased, and the debit card transaction, because these are the main pieces of evidence that we are aware of. So with the suicide theory, I have the hardest time attempting to explain the evidence. You know, how would it have played out if he died by suicide? But in this scenario, I think Lopez wipes his devices clean of his own volition. Possibly if he knew someone would be going through his devices, there was something he didn't want to be found. Then he drives his truck to Henrietta for reasons unknown, maybe buys gas, then drives his truck going back in the direction of Texas, crashes it in the town of Howe, maybe intentionally, and then wanders off and dies by suicide and conceals his body in a way to where he's never found. We have to assume that he persevered through any pain he may have been feeling from his previous injury or even the crash itself. As I'm saying this out loud, it doesn't make sense to me, completely removing the mental health component here, because again, we can't get inside Lopez's head. And just looking at the circumstances, it's very difficult to make sense of this being a suicide, but it remains a possibility.
I don't necessarily buy the suicide theory unless the motorcycle club was exerting just an overwhelming amount of pressure onto him and in a threatening nature that he felt the only way out was suicide.
I would think he would leave his life before, if that were the case, maybe try to get away or escape before suicide. And I think that's the second option here, that maybe he wanted to escape. Maybe he started a new life out of fear of what could happen to him or his family if he didn't. Or maybe he just needed some time away, as the police initially suggested to T. So how did he get to wherever he went in this theory? Maybe he drove off and was driving aimlessly until he got to Henrietta, similar to the suicide theory. He got gas there and then ended up in Howe, crashed his vehicle, and somehow got away undetected with no shoes. Someone would have had to have helped him at some point along the way to give him a ride somewhere. So this theory feels illogical as well. I can see how he could have wanted to get away temporarily if he had concerns about his safety, but no one believes he would have left his daughter and stepson permanently and his tattoo shop that he was so excited about. And not just excited about, but he had invested a lot of money into it. Additionally, none of the money in his bank accounts has been touched since July 8th. It's been between 2.5 and 3 years since Lopez vanished. As time passes, the possibility of him leaving his life to start anew while remaining undetected becomes less and less likely. On the surface, this theory makes sense to me. It does, that he would have wanted to escape from whatever was going on. But then when you take the information we have, the circumstances, and try to fit it in to the theory that he was trying to get away, it doesn't make sense to me. I can't really make it work out.
Yeah, we're in agreement there. I think this theory is definitely possible that he tried to leave, but yeah, the scene is just so weird, especially the shoes being left. Like, he had pins in his... unless he was getting picked up, he got help along the way, or he tried to hitch a ride, I guess, but why leave your shoes? What is the point of leaving your shoes?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, I think it's definitely possible that he wanted to leave, even though he had his 10-year-old daughter and his stepson, and he was still friends with T. That's a little heartbreaking if he left, but if he was feeling that much pressure, yeah, I think it's possible.
Well, he could have thought it was the best decision.
Yeah.
But I think it makes sense temporarily, but now we're years out. I know 2021 wasn't that long ago, but it's a long time to stay away and for no one to know where you are. T said that she thinks he would at least give her a quick phone call and be like, hey, I'm hiding out for whatever reason. I'm safe. I just want you to know that I can't tell you anything. That's what she thinks he would do based off knowing him for more than a decade. The final theory involves foul play of some sort, and we can't really speculate on what exactly happened to him, but we can think through the information we do have and how it would make sense under the assumption that he was a victim of foul play. There is a possibility that someone harmed Lopez in Rosenberg, then the person or persons responsible drove his truck, used his debit card, then crashed his truck in an attempt to conceal it and escaped in another vehicle. Maybe they erased the data on his devices because it could have pointed to them specifically. If Lopez was naming people he was having issues with, that could be motivation to clear his phone out. But why the GoPro? Why the digital camera? And why dispose of his truck to begin with? What does his truck have to do with anything? Or did they think the truck wouldn't be found and then people would think Lopez left in his truck and was off somewhere and the police would be looking for the truck too? Did they set his shoes outside of the truck? And also, would someone who took possession of his truck unlawfully really want to drive it for hundreds of miles, a missing person's vehicle? There's an obvious risk there of being pulled over. If an assailant would go so far as to clear his GoPro SIM card, would they be willing to drive his vehicle for that long? It's also possible that Lopez was with someone else. Maybe he was safe until he left Rosenberg. I tend to lean toward the belief that foul play was involved here, but it's certainly difficult to make sense of too.
Yeah, this one seems viable to me as well. I'm kind of thinking about the digital camera and the GoPro a little bit more. Maybe he was out at the motorcycle club and was breaking out the digital camera a lot and taking pictures of his buddies and, well, supposed buddies. And they looked through that when they performed this incident and they decided to delete all of those pictures that tied him to them. Same with the GoPro. Like I know a lot of people mount a GoPro on their dash in their vehicle. Maybe he had footage on his GoPro of them meeting up for whatever reason. They went through that footage and deleted it. But why not just take the GoPro and the digital camera with them and dispose of it that way?
Yeah.
Why go through the action of deleting pictures and footage and leaving them there rather than just taking them?
Right. Because if anything, it just makes it look more suspicious. And then they'd have to touch, unless they had gloves on, they'd have to touch the digital camera and GoPro. And if they were worried about any sort of physical evidence, that wouldn't be a good idea. Like it seems when you're driving miles and miles away, just dispose of the GoPro and the digital camera in some random dumpster. And I guarantee it would never be connected to this disappearance. GoPro also could have been used while he was riding his motorcycle, maybe put it on his helmet or something. But yeah, it could be any number of things. And again, anytime I try to make scenarios make sense in this case, I find myself like playing devil's advocate and thinking of, well, no, that doesn't make sense because X, Y, and Z. So it just makes it really challenging. Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch told Never Seen Again that he had a couple of people sort of infiltrate the motorcycle club to see if they could get information about Lopez's disappearance, but those individuals learned nothing of value. Nobody would say anything about it. Tim Miller also believes that wherever Lopez is right now, he did not choose to be there. Tia's done a nice job investigating Lopez's disappearance, and she has theories as to who could have harmed Lopez. Although, as I said in the beginning, she hasn't named anyone publicly. The perception is very much that T had to investigate the disappearance of Lopez on her own without much help from the police, which is quite the burden on someone who's grieving the ambiguous loss of the father of her child and a dear friend of hers. I think more exposure and more coverage of this case is key because maybe someone saw something. I know it's been almost 3 years now, but maybe someone saw Lopez or someone else in Howe or any other town in Texas or Oklahoma where they may have stopped around that time. And maybe that stuck out and they just haven't heard of his disappearance to even know that they saw anything of value. It is a long shot, but this case has not dominated the media in any way. So I just think the more exposure, the better, so that one day his family, his children, don't have to wonder what happened to him. Lopez Richardson is described as a Black male weighing approximately 210 pounds and standing at 6'2". He had brown eyes and medium-length dreadlocks, a beard, and a mustache. He has quite a few tattoos on his body, with two of the more distinctive being on his eyelids. One eyelid says deer and the other eyelid says life. And he has a tattoo of Emmett Till on his right hand. If you have information related to the disappearance of Lopez Richardson, please contact the Rosenberg Police Department at 832-595-3700 or Texas EquiSearch at 281-309-9500. Thank you all for joining us today. I really want to know what others think in this case. Any ideas anyone may have? I would love for someone to just present a scenario where they can make sense of all of the information we've provided and it could explain what happened to him, because we haven't been able to do that. So I would love if someone could do that. What do you think happened here? The best way to tell us is by heading over to our Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast, or by emailing us at keytothecase@gmail.com. That is all for now, but we will be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.